It's sad to think that human beings would go through life with fixed ideas, programming, and they never change. And they're not aware. They're just not aware of what's going on. Very religious people, some of them, but no awareness. I really meant that. You might as well have been a block of wood. You might as well have been a rock. Really. A talking, walking, thinking machine, computer. That's not human. Puppet, jerked around by all kinds of things. Press a button, you'll get the reaction. I told you that yesterday. You could almost predict to the nth degree how a human being is going to react. Just study the person, oh, for a day, and I'll tell you exactly how he or she is going to react. And sometimes write it on a piece of paper for my therapy group and say, so-and-so is going to start the session. So-and-so will reply. There are the machines, true to plan, go on. That's painful. They're not aware. And don't listen to the people who say to you, forget yourself, go out in love to others. Don't listen to them. They're all wrong. The worst thing you can do is to forget yourself when you go out to others. Go out in your so-called helping attitude. You know, this was brought home to me very forcefully many years ago when I did my studies in Chicago in psychology. We had a course in counseling for priests. Was only open to priests who were actually engaged in counseling and who agreed to bring a tape to class. So we did that. Well, must have been about 20 of us. When it was my turn, I brought a cassette, a tape, to class that had engraved on it, impressed on it, an interview that I had with a young woman. Well, I took it to class, the instructor put it in a tape recorder, and we all began to hear it. After 5 minutes, as was his custom, the instructor stopped the tape. He said, any comments? Someone said to me, why did you ask her that question? I said, I'm not aware that I asked any question. As a matter of fact, I'm quite sure I did not ask any question. He said, oh no, you did. See, I was quite sure because I was consciously following the method of Carl Rogers, person-oriented, non-directive. You don't ask questions, you don't interrupt, you don't give advice, etc. So I was very aware that I mustn't ask questions. All right, there was a bit of a dispute between the two of us, and the instructor said, why don't we play that again? So we played that again and heard it. And there, to my horror, was a whopping big question, as tall as the Empire State Building. A huge question, you couldn't miss it. Now, you know, the interesting thing was that I had heard that question three times. The first time, presumably, when I asked it. The second time, when I listened to the tape in my room, because I wanted to take a good tape to class, see? And the third time, when I heard it in the room, in the classroom, but it hadn't registered. I wasn't aware. That happens frequently in my therapy sessions or directions, spiritual direction sessions or whatever. We tape the interview, we record it, and again and again and again, when the client listens to it, he or she says, you know, I didn't really hear what you said in the interview. I only heard it when I listened to the tape. More interestingly, I didn't really hear what I said in the when we had the interview. I only heard, look what I said. Somewhat humiliatingly, I sometimes discover what I said when I'm listening to the tape with her. That's shocking. It's shocking to discover that I'm saying things. I'm saying things, for heaven's sake, in a therapy session that I'm not aware of. the full import of which only dawns on me later. You call that human? Forget yourself and go out to others? Well, I had an even more shattering experience that morning, because when we listened to the whole tape, the instructor said, "Any comments?" One of the priests, a 50-year-old man, whom I took a liking to, he'd sit in one corner of the room smoking his pipe. He said to me, "Tony, I'd like to ask you a personal question. Would that be all right?" I said, "Yeah, go ahead. If I don't want to answer it, I won't. What's the personal question?" He said, "This woman you're interviewing, is she pretty?" Now, you know, honest to goodness, I was at a stage of my development or undevelopment, or whatever you want to call it, where I really didn't notice if someone was good-looking or not. I really didn't. It didn't matter. I mean, she was a sheep in the flock of Christ. I was the pastor. I sort of... I dispensed help. Yes, I mean, it didn't say great. That's the way we were trained, the good old training. So I said to her, said to him, "What has that got to do with it, whether she's pretty or not?" He said, "You don't like her, do you?" "What? You don't like her, do you?" Well, hadn't ever struck me that I liked or disliked people, or mostly occasional powerful likes and dislikes would register in consciousness, but the other ones wouldn't. You know, it was mostly neutral. I said, "What makes you say that?" He says, "The tape." I said, "You mean you get that from the interview?" He said, "Yes, would you like me to show you?" I said, "Yes, I'd be happy to." We went through that tape again, and he said, "Listen to your voice here, how sweet it has become. You're irritated, aren't you?" I was. I was only becoming aware of it right there. "And look what you're doing here, non-directively, for heaven's sake." You know what I was saying to her? I was saying, "Don't come back," but I wasn't aware of it. And he said, "She's a woman. She'll have picked this up." They say women have a sixth sense. Yes. Remember the guy who's supposed to have had a sixth sense, but he lacked all the other five? So he said, "You're saying, don't come back, don't come back." He said, "When are you supposed to meet her next?" I said, "Well, next Wednesday." He said, "My guess is she won't come back." She didn't. She didn't. I waited for 1 week, she didn't come. Waited for another Wednesday, she didn't come. Then I called her. I broke one of my rules. I called her. Generally, don't. Let them take the initiative. Don't be a rescuer. But I said to her, "You remember that tape you allowed me to make for the class?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "You know, it was a great help, because they pointed out all kinds of things to me," I didn't tell her what, "that would help me to be more effective. So if you'd care to come back, you're free to. I think I'd be somewhat more effective." She said, "All right, I'll come back." She did. The dislike was still there, hadn't gone away, but it wasn't coming in the way. That's important. What you are aware of, you are in control of. What you are not aware of is in control of you. You are always a slave to what you're not aware of. When you're aware of it, you're free from it. It's there, but you're not affected by it. You're not controlled by it. You're not enslaved by it. That's the difference. Awareness. Awareness, awareness, awareness. What they trained us to do at that course was to become participant observers. Like, I'd be talking to you, to put it somewhat graphically, I'd be talking to you, and I'd be here talking to you, and I'd be out there watching you and watching me. When I'm listening to you, it is infinitely more important for me to listen to me than to listen to you. See if you could get that one. When I'm listening to you, it's infinitely more important for me to listen to me than to listen to you. Of course it's important to listen to you, but it's even more important that I be listening to me. Or else I won't be hearing you. Or else I'll be distorting everything you say. Or else I'll be coming at you from my own conditioning. Or else I'll be reacting to you in all kinds of ways, from my insecurities, from my need to manipulate you, from my desire to succeed, from my irritations and feelings that I may not be aware of. So it's frightfully important that I be listening to me when I'm listening to you. That's what they were training us to do. It was a training in awareness. And as I shall tell you this morning, how important it is that you be listening to yourself, observing yourself, watching yourself constantly as you react to life and to people, to the world. So important. How does one do this? Does one do this consciously? You know, I said to you, observe yourself the way you would be observing someone else. That needs a little explanation. You don't always have to imagine yourself hovering up somewhere there in the air, looking at yourself. No. You know, to give you an idea, a rough idea of what I'm talking about, imagine a good driver is driving a car. He's concentrating on what you're saying. In fact, he's having an argument with you. That's how much he's concentrating. But he's perfectly aware of all the road signals. And the moment anything untoward happens, the moment there's any untoward sound or noise or bump, he hears it at once. He says, "You sure you closed that door back there?" How did he get that? He was aware. He was alert. The focus of his attention was on the conversation, on the argument. But his awareness was more diffuse. He was taking in all kinds of things. What I'm advocating here is not concentration. That's not important. Lots of meditative techniques inculcate concentration. I'm wary of those things. They involve violence. And they frequently involve further programming and conditioning. What I would advocate is awareness, which is not the same as concentration at all. Concentration is a spotlight. Awareness, floodlight. You're open to anything that comes within the scope of your consciousness. Big difference. So when you're practicing awareness, you're never distracted. You may go to sleep. Go to sleep even though you're awake, which means you may turn off the awareness. Then you're asleep, even though you're talking and reading, etc. But when the awareness is turned on, there's never any distraction because you're always aware of whatever, wherever the focus of your attention happens to be. Like now I'm looking at those trees. Now I'm worrying. Was I distracted? You would have been distracted only if you were meant to concentrate on the trees. But if you're aware that you're worried, that isn't a distraction at all. Just be aware of where the focus of your attention goes. And above all, if you're practicing this even to a limited degree, you'll develop an extraordinary skill. When anything goes awry or anything untoward happens, you'll be alerted at once. Something's going wrong. The moment any negative feeling comes into consciousness, you'll be alerted. Something going wrong. And you'll give it your attention. Something like the driver of the car. Awareness, awareness, awareness. Now, I told you that as you begin to practice self-observation, you will see yourself that you are observing you. I am observing me. Now that's a strange phenomenon. I observing me. Remember I told you yesterday, St. Teresa of Avila would say that God gave her the grace of disidentifying herself from herself. You know, little children talk that way. A two-year-old will say, Tommy had his breakfast this morning. He doesn't say I. He says Tommy. Third person. Mystics feel that way. They don't feel I have a problem. They feel Tommy has a problem. That's extraordinary. They have disidentified from themselves. And at last, they're at peace. This is the grace that St. Teresa of Avila was talking about. This is the I that the mystic masters of the East are constantly urging people to discover. And of the West too, because you can count Meister Eckhart among them. They're urging people to discover the I. Who's I? What's I?